Hey folks, I am Connor, and this is my far better informed friend, Fen.
Hi.
So, what are we talking about?
Well, before we talk about anything, I would like to give a huge shout out to Stan the Man Lee, a guy who was my surrogate father my entire childhood, and really changed the world by writing characters that people love. So, excelsior, Stan. Yeah. We'll miss you, buddy.
Excelsior.
Yeah, man. Stan.
That's a tough one. I was just watching.
Yeah, it is. That's a tough way to start.
I was just watching an Infinity War movie. I had never seen it. I finally saw it last week, you know. And my heart broke a little bit when I saw how frail he looked in the cameo.
Yeah.
I had been thinking about him, you know, and then obviously I had no idea this was coming, but yeah. It's real rough to see him go. Real sorry to see him go.
Yeah, for sure. And he didn't. His last couple of years weren't very pleasant for him either.
No, that's heartbreaking. It shows you, anybody can be exploited. Anybody can be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
You got to look out for people.
That's the saddest part. A guy like that who changed so many lives and really had such an impact on, so many people worldwide, and he didn't have anybody looking out for him.
Yeah.
I'd have had his back.
Yeah. Kevin Smith said, hey, come live with me. And he never did.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even that, is kind of a sweet, I don't know. I found that quite moving.
I love Kevin Smith. He's one of my favorite people on the planet.
I love Kevin Smith. I love Kevin Smith even when he makes a bad movie. He's never made an unwatchable movie, and yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a full-on statement, I'd say. That is the truth right there. Never made it unwatchable.
And you can't say that about everybody. You really can't. So
Kubrick.
I'm not a The Shining is one of my favorite movies of all time, but I'm not a Kubrick guy so much.
Fair enough.
I can't get through Barry Lyndon, actually. So on a personal level, that's an unwatchable movie. But I recognize that it's a great movie. That makes sense. Yeah. Another thing, we had a couple of people asking about. So what's your background? What are you doing here? So my background is I'm some dude from Ireland, and I'm interested. That's it. I'm not bringing any particular knowledge. I'm actually here to learn a little bit and to talk. And how about you, buddy?
My background is that I have a friend from Ireland who is absolutely curious about why the hell my country ended up the way it is.
Yeah.
And I actually have, I don't know. I lost count of how many books that I've read about American politics on both sides of the aisles. I've read the basic philosophies and the core tenets of either side of liberalism and conservatism many times. Articles and articles and articles. My friends used to tell me to look up from things, mm-hmm. And that's I just retain that stuff. That's always been my forte, is retaining things I read and see. And those are my credentials, And if you don't believe what I'm saying, then look it up for yourself. I had to do the hard work.
Read a book?
Yeah, read a book, man. I had to do the hard work.
Fucking A. All right. So what's the meat today on the table?
Well, the meat of the table today is the United States justice, the politicization of the United States justice system. Of course, it's always been a little bit political. It is part of the executive branch, which, is a political branch, is a branch of our political system. But it's not the abject partisanship of it has become something new. The Whitaker thing got me thinking about it. I don't know. I'm going to assume that everyone here listening knows that an unconstitutional appointment has been made to head our Justice Department in the name of a guy, Matt Whitaker, who really was kind of a nobody until he auditioned for the job on TV. I can't believe I just said that. But since we have a part-time president who spends about 9 hours a day of executive time watching Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, mm-hmm. and refuses to admit it, by the way, that was probably the perfect place for that guy to interview for the job. And I had never heard of him because he was a nobody. It got me, and the first thing I started thinking of, okay, this guy's an abject partisan. He's a former U.S. attorney. Why is he a former U.S. attorney? And how did a guy like this even get into the system? And I wrote that thread, and you and I talked about it a little bit, and it just feels like something that maybe we should talk about. Because it matters. It's not, I mean, on that thread, I'd say a good 40% of the responses I got were, it's Trump's fault. Because the question was, how did a guy like this get into the justice system, and how is he there still? And 40% of the people answered with, because of Trump. It's not because of Trump.
If we had to pick a couple of phrases that that are sort of our bywords, talking to you, I always get the feeling of how we got here matters.
How we got here is everything.
Yeah.
It's like saying, it's like dropping a handful of nails and picking up 10 of them and not realizing why you dropped them.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? Oh, look, you know, there's some nails on the ground, and you only pick up a few of them, but then you don't really realize how they got there.
Yeah.
I guess is what we just said. But yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, Twain said it best. It doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes.
Yeah, I love that. I really love that.
But so, if you don't know the poem, what good is it?
Yeah. Okay, so give me something about this. Give me a little bit of background.
Okay, we're going to go. I want to go back to right after George W. Bush won. The first time, and which is stunningly topical again, given that Florida is recounting again.
Oh, Jesus, flashbacks. Even as an Irish dude, I'm getting like traumatized flashbacks to that election. I can't imagine what it's like for you, but go on.
If someone says hanging Chad, I might just cut off a testicle.
Oh.
Kidding. Is that too far?
Can we avoid that? What can we do to avoid that? Okay.
I'm sorry. That was a little too far. This is a family show. It's not. I don't think
it should be, and it isn't. And I refuse to participate in a family show. I have no place in
that. Fucking A.
Yeah.
So, but I do want to go back to the beginning of the Bush administration, because when they won, it wasn't a mandate, you know? I mean, Bush won on the strength of one state and one county.
Yeah.
But you had a guy named Karl Rove, who everybody knows by now because, surprise, surprise, he runs one of the largest, most successful super PACs in the country. Mm-hmm. Well, he did. Crossword GPS has nowhere near the power it did anymore because of Trump, you know? But it did at the time, you know, for years after the Trump presidency, all the way through the Obama presidency, they and the Kochs were kind of the primary funders of Republican politics. And it's because Karl Rove, as weird and single-minded as he is, was a little bit genius in things that he, you know, sometimes if a politician wins with like 60, 70% of the vote, they call it a mandate, right? And that legitimately is a mandate. Karl Rove was able to convince America that 50 plus 1% was a mandate.
Right.
And that's just staggering, you know? And if you're able to do that, because that's a lie. And if you're able to propagate a lie like that, why not go for the gold? Why not just lie all the time? Yeah. So, and they did. They did. They moved that into the 2004 election, right? All the way through. I'm gonna take just a second to say that the central event of the Bush presidency, and really of America from 2000 to 2010, is 9/11, right. And it's something I don't talk about it a lot, not because I don't think about it, but just because it's become such a part of my national reality that it's an accepted truth, I guess. And I hate to do that because then I'm not given the right context. So I want to say that the context does involve 9/11, the groundswell of support for Bush after 9/11, I think, re-emboldened his political director, Karl Rove, who was sometimes called his brain, Bush's brain. I think it re-emboldened him to continue forth on this, we can do whatever we want. Karl Rove was famous for saying that he felt like they could get a permanent Republican majority. Permanent. That he thought that Congress would be permanently Republican if he did his job right. Yeah, it's pretty scary too, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's That's authoritarianism, man.
Yeah.
You know? Just outright. And you know, the funny thing is, you know, you get these people now, oh, Trump's an authoritarian. And I'm like, this ain't fucking nothing new. They've been saying that since Bush. Bush's dad would have never said anything like that. And as much as I despised Reagan, he would have never said anything like that either. But starting with Bush W., that's when the real authoritarianism came around. And I'd also like to say that one of the reasons I feel they had that attitude was because they had gotten the religious right so ingrained into their party that authoritarianism of Christianity, that base authoritarianism that Christianity can have, was insinuating itself into the party. That's when they started with the "you're not with us, you're against us."
When you mentioned George W. Bush and authoritarianism, the first thing that goes through my mind is "you're with us, you're against us."
Yeah, yeah, and you know what's funny? And you should think that because that was directed at your country,
right?
I mean, it was directed at every country in the world. Mm-hmm. But what happened is that it was directed at Americans too, like not on purpose. But it started being used by House members and Senate members that were Republicans to question the patriotism of other members of Congress who didn't agree with them.
Right.
Most especially during two things, when they were trying to pass the Patriot Act and during the run-up to the Iraq War. If you're not a patriot, became a cudgel then. And I got to tell you, as a veteran, I had Republicans tell me that I wasn't a patriot because I didn't think it was a good idea to go into Iraq.
That must have felt great.
Well, it's a good thing I didn't drink more then, I'll tell you that. I could have gotten in fights. I really could have, you know? I really could have because, for people who had done nothing for their country except bitch to tell me something like that, you know? But I would always try to keep... I'm stupidly patient sometimes, maybe I was then, but I would always try to keep it into context. These people are, you know, they've never seen anything like this before, and maybe that's what's really talking, is they're still in shock. But it's been almost 20 years. I don't you don't get your shock no more, you know. Grow up. I was talking with my wife last night, and we were talking about people who continuously blame their childhood for who they are as a person. And not that there aren't people who, like, I mean, I would be a different person if I had a different childhood, and I don't blame my childhood for who I am, but I accept my childhood for who I am. But there did come a day when I learned that I had to make my own bed and that nobody else was going to make it for me.
Right.
And even if it gave me maybe PTSD, which I think it probably did, I'm still the one that had to come to terms with the fact that that's what was going on with me and move on from there. And I think that for someone to 9/11, I mean, come on, 20 years, you know, move on. You got to figure out a way past things, or you'll live there forever.
Yeah. And from an outsider's point of view, there seems to be a lot of cynical use of it as well at this point.
Yeah, well, of course.
I mean, there was on day one, almost.
It was being used cynically from day one, yeah. You know? It makes me sad, though. Like, that's the last time I've seen my country truly unified.
Yeah.
And sometimes I cry a little bit over that.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. Because we were talking about U.S. attorneys.
Yeah, let's talk about U.S. attorneys.
Yeah, we love staying on top of ground here at The Watcher. So, okay, so these U.S. attorneys, right? So when the 2004 election comes around, the Bush administration, they start hammering on gay marriage, gay marriage, gay marriage, and they're getting the religious right worked up. Well, one of the issues they started using to drum up their base was fear, as what a shocker, right? Mm-hmm. And it was fear of a group called, they've been doing it since Nixon. It was the fear of a group called ACORN, who I'm sure... there are documented cases of them behaving inappropriately, but generally speaking, they were a voter registration drive group. They took some federal funding, but mostly their funding was private. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember a man by the name of James O'Keefe. Have you heard of him?
No. Well, the name rings a bell, but no.
He is the guy who started the group Project Veritas. They're famous for their doctor.
Okay. Yeah,
Yeah,
sorry.
those guys, you know.
Yeah.
The ones who have, and this, he's personally been busted too. The ones who have been busted in federal courts numerous times, you know, for false ID, doctoring videos, lying, just outright lying, you know. And yet they still exist. This guy still has a freaking job. People still pay him to do this stuff.
Veritas. It is,
Yeah.
I mean, it's fucked up, but it's funny as shit, you know?
You know what? It's another Republican scam group. I almost feel bad for the Republican base voter sometimes, almost, because they are the victim of so many scams and lies. And we talked about that a lot in episode zero. We really did. But they're just the victim of so many scams and lies. They just go on and on. There's a terrible, terrible problem in this country with, and I'm going to use air quotes, conservative action groups. Scamming people out of their money and then using all the donated money to just pay themselves, basically, not doing anything with it, but paying themselves. So anyway, we'll go back to the U.S. Attorney thing. So after 2004, after they just won barely again in 2004, on the backs of hating gay people and hating black people again because ACORN registered black people, you know, I don't know. I'm not even gonna. We need to do an episode on that. We really do, just on the systemic destruction of an entire people over and over and over again for political gain.
Yeah.
So they did that, and one of the, and of course it was a mandate, you know, because, you know, Karl Rove said it was. Well, right after that election, they hatched a plan, the Bush administration did, to further Karl Rove's permanent majority. And one of these plans was to start legally attacking, or attacking in court, I should say, because it's questionable legality, attacking in court or bringing charges against or investigating without base Democratic leaders, Democratic fundraisers, Democratic groups, outside groups, ACORN most notably, for, quote, illegal, end quote, election activities. And they drummed up a lot of charges. This guy, O'Keefe, helped out with a video of him ridiculously dressing like some caricature of a 70s pimp out of a bad blaxploitation movie.
Oh, shit, I remember
that. You remember
that,
right? Yeah, like he was ridiculously dressed, dude. Like, one of the reasons I've questioned that video the whole time is because he was sitting across the table from an obviously intelligent black woman who I think knew the jig. I think she knew what was up. I think she was messing with him.
She's talking to Huggy Bear.
Right. Like, she didn't know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She grew up with that stuff just like everybody else that age did, you know?
Yeah.
She had to know that dude wasn't on the level. But that's my conjecture. I'm not going to say that as fact.
Right.
But so now, at the time, and I'm going to harken back to, I wish I could remember the name of the book, but I read an excellent book that had been written at the time that this was happening. And it was about how the evangelical and fundamentalist population in this country has actually been shrinking for a long, long time, because it's pretty extreme and our culture has broadened and gotten a little looser. And, you know, people like to have sex before they get married and like to kiss and dance and listen to music, you know. Because, yeah, they are that. Yeah, disgusting. How terrible is it that you want to be a part of culture? Okay. Anyway, or, you know, maybe have a curious mind.
Yeah.
So, and I'll tell everyone that is listening that I know that fundamentalists don't allow those things because my family is fundamentalist, and I know quite well how they do.
Okay.
So my credentials on that are personal experience.
Yeah.
In tiny little churches that I was told I was going to hell. So, that's a fun way to spend your Sunday. So, this population is shrinking. This evangelical population is shrinking, right? And I am personally suspicious that a guy like Karl Rove probably knew what became public for the Republican Party 6 or 7 years later, which was that their demographic was dying off, and they didn't really have much choice anymore. They had to start acting in undemocratic ways if they wanted to maintain relevance in this country. And I believe that in my heart, that they knew that was coming long before it was on the mainstream media.
That's interesting.
Well, because if a guy like me could go to the dollar store and pick up a book that was full of statistics as to why and how many numbers were going down in their core voter base, surely a guy like Karl Rove, who had access to far more statistics than I did, knew that was coming too.
Yeah.
Does that seem like a logical leap?
Very much.
I mean, I can't be in Karl Rove's head, but surely he had access to more data than I did, you know?
Yeah.
And I could also pick up, you know, like I've always read The New Republic. I've always read Salon. I've always read the Weekly Standard, and I've always read the National Review. Those have been my four big liberals, or my four big political, philosophical online magazines. I mostly read them online. Mm-hmm. Those have been my four big ones, though. I did read The Nation for a while, but well, I don't know. I don't want to get into that. It seemed for The Nation, nothing was ever good enough, and I didn't like that about them.
Okay.
There was never any, hey, this is going in a good direction. And, you know, I mean, I want to know what your ideas are, no matter what side of the policy debate you're on, but surely something must satisfy you every once in a while.
Right.
And I never really felt like The Nation, because I subscribed to it. A friend of mine got me a subscription, and it was like 2 years long. And it was, I mean, it was cool. I liked it, and it had some people in it. Like, Chris Hayes came from The Nation, and not really the biggest Chris Hayes fan, but I mean, he's a smart guy, you know, and there were a lot of smart people in that publication, but they were just never satisfied. It was never enough. And I'm not okay with that, you know. Eventually, you have to be satisfied or you're never going to be happy. So Karl Rove knows their base is shrinking. He has to know.
Right.
And they decide that they're going to start using the justice system to attack their political enemies, which smacks of Stalinism. Smacks of it. I mean, Hitler wasn't that subtle, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was lock you up or whatever, you know? But Stalin was more subtle about it, and Mao was a little more subtle about it, but a little more towards Hitler. But Stalin was more, I will use within the system to make it seem legit.
Right.
And that's what Karl Rove was doing. Him and Harriet Myers, if you remember that name, perchance.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually, I believe she was nominated for Supreme Court. I think that's right. I want to Google it, but I don't do that during this show because I prefer to operate off my own knowledge.
Yeah.
I think it was Supreme Court. It could have been Attorney General, but I think it was a Supreme Court. But she's another name that will live in infamy because she ended up having, I think 14 people had to resign in disgrace over this, because what they were doing was, here's the devious part. What they were doing was they were telling particular U.S. attorneys, hey, we want you to look into ex-congressmen in Oklahoma, right? They had a little district in Oklahoma that this guy was like incumbency has its advantages in our system. If you're an incumbent, your chance of reelection is something like 90%. That's not one of those just throw the statistic out there statistics. That's pretty damn close to the truth.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. You know, well, you have an advantage. I mean, you already know all the people. You already know the fundraisers. You already know everyone in your district. Usually know you have name recognition right off the bat.
Uh-huh.
You have the party apparatus behind you already. So incumbency has its advantages. Well, let's say that, you know, and I'm using this as an example. I'm not sure that this is exactly the truth, but let's just say that they had a Democratic congressman somewhere in Kansas who was just dug in like a tick, man, and he lasted both George W. Bush elections, and he was still there, and they hated him. They wanted him out of there. That had to be red. Karl Rove, that had to be red, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he and Harriet Myers, or he would get in touch with somebody who got in touch with somebody, and they'd work their way through the justice system, and they'd ask a U.S. attorney to investigate. Now, this stuff is documented. I don't have the names of it, but given time, I could easily with the internet, find legitimate publications that tell these stories with names. Mm-hmm. But what they were doing was is they'd say, I want you to investigate this congressman. I want you to find out something that he's done, and I want you to bust him so that in 2 years when the midterms come, we can get him out of there. Or he'll already be gone, and the governor there can appoint somebody, or we can have a special election, and since he won't be the incumbent anymore, we have a better chance of getting a Republican in there. That's, or maybe a 100% chance. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And that's really Stalin-esque, buddy. It really is. Mm-hmm. Using the system mm-hmm. against itself.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what their plan is, right? This is what they're doing. And this is like right after the elections, buddy. 50 plus 1% is a mandate. We can do what we want. So this goes on, and now it took a couple of years. What happened was in 2006, the Democrats won a huge majority. Big majority. They won the House and the Senate. Because people were tired of George Bush, man. I mean, they were tired of I'm the splainer or whatever the stupid things he used to say all the time, you know? Oh, I'm explain. What was it? I'm the explainer in chief or something like, no. No, it wasn't that. I'm the decider. That was my personal favorite one. I'm the decider. Yeah. I'm public television. I'm the decider. Yeah. Shut up.
My favorite ever George W. Bushism was when he said, look, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, well, you won't fool me again.
No, it's better. He said, we won't get fooled again.
We won't get fooled again. That's it.
Trick.
Oh, man.
It was so great. Oh, my God, you're an idiot. Go away.
Yeah. It's magic.
So anyway, yeah, it is. It's magically tragic. Yeah. Okay, you know, and just as like a little sidebar, I would like to point out that the last two Republican presidents, to include this one, have been astoundingly incompetent.
Right.
Astoundingly incompetent. And I'd like to ask, I wonder what that says about their base. Because that's how they get that nomination, you know?
I mean,
okay.
Did I ever tell you the quote, like the single quote that tied up everything for me when Brexit happened here in the UK?
You did, but I'd love to hear it again because it's fantastic.
I can't remember the dude's name, right? He's some shitbag. Was on BBC and he was talking. And it was like one of those talking heads shows, you know? And there's a professor who is explaining how Britain is essentially going to go down the toilet if Brexit happens. And he's explaining it all pretty reasonably. And this conservative, air quotes conservative, is arguing against it. And eventually the professor starts explaining something pretty reasonable. And the dude says, look, we're all sick of experts, okay? It's not the time for experts anymore. And that was the first time I heard it, but I heard that phrase quite a lot then over the next little while. And
was he married to Sarah Palin?
But the thing is,
that's a perfect match.
That's a real thing. That idea of like, well, experts are bad, and it's Brexit here, and it's your GOP over there.
You know what? Reagan used to say pointy-headed liberals all the time.
Right.
Yeah, ivory tower and pointy-headed liberals were two things he loved to say. I wonder if maybe he got beat up in college or something.
Fucking Reagan, man.
We got to do this, man. We gotta have this conversation because it's too important. We get up.
Yeah, let's. Okay,
I wish I had coffee. So, what were you gonna say on the back? What?
No, yeah. So Reagan's on the back burner. We're doing one about him. I fucking hate Reagan.
I want to do one about the crash too because you reminded me of that.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely.
Because that was just such a shit show that I can't believe that. Like, and you know, no one ever says, Bush, by the way, that's your fault. When it really wasn't Bush's fault, it was Clinton's fault. But that's a whole can of worms I just opened.
Right on. Let's dive in at some point.
And what's that? Yeah, for sure. Because that's a big old can of worms that nobody ever likes to admit. But Clinton kind of kicked that off with some of his legislation.
Wow.
Okay, so back to what we were talking about. So they've decided that by the time, what they want to do is they want to use the justice system to hammer on Democratic operatives, Democratic groups, and Democratic politicians so that by 2006 they can increase their majority, not just retain it, but increase it to hopefully work towards a permanent majority. Again, I mean, if incumbency has such a high rate of reelection, why would you not want to just have incumbents? Doesn't matter who they are, as long as they're incumbents, you know? Mm-hmm. So now it's debatable about who actually came up with this litmus test, but what happened was is when they found that particular U.S. attorneys were not willing to circumvent their oath to the Constitution by investigating people who really didn't have any evidentiary basis of an investigation, they would fire them.
Okay.
And while they were doing that, and one of the it's not a direct quote, but one of the things that was said, and it came out during the congressional hearings, was that they did it one by one by one by one. Like, they wanted to get rid of all these people at the same, because they sent the word out all over the U.S. Justice system, and they got word back from all, you know, most of them, hey, I have no reason to do this. I'm not going to waste taxpayer dollars doing it, and I'm surely not going to ruin my reputation for your politics, which I think was probably more of that than taxpayer dollars. Although I don't know each individual U.S. attorney's motivation, but surely they have to think of themselves and their career, you know?
It's got to be in there.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably pretty career-minded if you're a U.S. attorney, one would think. And so when they found out that these U.S. attorneys were saying no, they fired them. Not all at once, but little by little in a tiny little trickle. And what they were doing while they were doing this was they were farming the Federalist Society and Liberty University. Are you familiar?
Federalist, but not Liberty University.
That's Falwell's University.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hard right Christians.
Right.
His dad was still around at the time. They were farming them from those two places particularly. And my personal opinion of the Federalist Society is that it's been a hard right organization just about since its inception.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there are attorneys and judges that have come out of that think tank, I use that term very loosely, that don't believe in the 10th Amendment, that don't believe in the 14th Amendment, you know, that think nullification is A-okay. And it's that, like Whitaker, don't think that the court system is a co-equal branch of government.
Can you tell can you tell me what the 10th Amendment and the 14th Amendment are, please?
The 14th Amendment is the amendment that has birthright citizenship, and I believe it's the one that freed the slaves, I think.
I think that's the 13th Amendment.
It is the 13th Amendment, yeah.
But the 14th is in the news a lot at the moment.
Well, that's because of birthright citizenship.
Absolutely. And the 10th?
The 10th is the ability of states to not nullify laws.
Okay. So does that tie to basically what they eventually started calling states' rights, the whole 10th Amendment thing? Okay.
It does. Okay. It does. Yeah, it does. I'm pretty sure that's the 10th. There's a term, tenther.
Okay.
And I'm pretty positive that that's what the 10th Amendment primarily is about, is that states can't nullify federal law.
Okay.
And we had a whole war over it, dude. It's pretty decided.
Yeah.
Like, we killed more of each other than any other war ever since before. It's pretty well decided, you know? But there are people who don't, you know, they want to do whatever the fuck they want to do, and they just don't care. So, what was going on is that these, they were firing these U.S. attorneys, and they were filling them in with, they had an actual, like, a questionnaire about, you know, their Christian beliefs and their political beliefs. And if you didn't score right or answer the questions right, you were not put in the contention to be a part of the U.S. justice system at the time.
That's crazy.
So, but, yeah.
Yeah,
it really is. Because, I mean, like, there's a blindfold over the statue for a reason, buddy. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, there's a fucking reason for that. And there's scales for a reason, you know? It's because it's not supposed to be poisoned by politics. And it can be, and it probably always will be to some degree, like I said when we started this. But to use it as a cudgel against your political enemies is not democracy, that's authoritarianism, in my opinion. So
that makes sense.
What we have now, because of this, are guys like Matt Whitaker, who have been in this system. A bunch of people had to resign. We finally got rid of Karl Rove because of this scandal. And a bunch of people had to resign. Some of whom are still U.S. attorneys, by the way. They got their jobs back.
Oh.
But a lot of people, well, now here's the thing. The people that machinated this had to resign. The people that got their jobs because of it stayed in the system.
Oh, right.
So really, what did you fix?
Fucking boys from Brazil, man.
Right. If you're the group that did it, and the only people that got in trouble are the ones that actually did it, but you still get to keep the money, well, you kind of came out the winner there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're living
through. Crime.
It is. And that's what we're living through with guys like Whitaker and guys like Kavanaugh.
So where are we today?
Well, where are we today? Today we have a system that is, we have a U.S. attorney system that has been unnecessarily politicized and continues to do so. Like, oftentimes you'll hear the NRA use like if we wanted to do universal background checks, it's a, quote, slippery slope, end quote. You've heard that term, right?
Oh, boy. Yeah. If there was ever a slippery slope, it was using the phrase slippery slope.
Right, yeah, because it could be applied to just about anything and you could call it bullshit or not.
Yeah.
But in this context, it's true. And I'll tell you why. The week that Jeff Sessions took over, he practically disbanded the Civil Rights Division. He did disband the whatever division that was solely focused on white supremacist groups.
Oh, yeah.
He disbanded that group. For politics. And why wouldn't you, if you knew that the last administration you liked filled it with a bunch of people that you know believe like you? Mm-hmm. Because if those guys were U.S. attorneys then, and they did their job even half as well as any government servant could, they at least stayed at the same position, most likely got promoted a little bit. So you're Jeff Sessions and you come into the Justice Department and you know that U.S. attorneys that were on your side in 2004 and 6, well, they're higher up in the system now. And not a damn one of them's going to say boo when you take the funding away from the Civil Rights Division or when you stop them from doing their job because they never believed in it in the first place. They always thought it was a waste of money.
Right.
So then it becomes easier for this administration that we're in now to do the things that... guys like Brian Buettler, and I'm not sure that's the right pronunciation, guys like Brian Buettler or Ajit Hir or Amanda Marquette were writing about in 2006, it was fanciful. You know, there's no way you'd get, you know, guys on the National Review or guys in the Weekly Standard. It's fanciful. There's no way they'd ever get rid of the Civil Rights Division. It's a core bedrock part of the justice system. And then what, you get 10 years later, the Supreme Court says, and the Voting Rights Act doesn't apply anymore. Not one conservative thought that was a problem. Not one. And then you get Jeff Sessions coming in, what, 4 years later, 8 years later, 6 years later, well, we're just going to pretty much cut off all funding to the Civil Rights Division. We're not going to police departments anymore. And the executive is going to go ahead and start giving them weapons of war again. Not one conservative said boo. The same ones who were writing in 2004 and 2006 that would never happen, that they'd never get rid of the Civil Rights Division, that the FBI will always come down on white supremacist groups. Well, now they're not. And not one of them said boo about it. Well, why? Because they always knew that's what they wanted. You know? Because they're authoritarians, man.
None of it's an accident, no.
No, none of it is an accident. None of it is. And you know, I wrote the other day, why are any of you surprised? It was when he picked Whitaker. No, it was when he fired Sessions. It was before he even picked Whitaker. And you know, social media was freaking out. And yeah, it's retarded. And yeah, it's crazy. And yeah, it's authoritarian. But yeah, they've been doing it for decades. Why are you surprised? You know, don't pay attention to what my other hand's doing, because I'm going to shock you with something you already knew was going to happen. What? Who falls for that, man?
All of us. I mean, most of us.
Not me, buddy.
Time to time, yeah.
But, okay, now I have to realize, now I'm going to step back for a second, and I think, like, it occurs to me that the things that just came out of my mouth were most likely insulting to people who care a lot, and who were genuinely outraged by this. And I have to think to myself, I have to constantly remind myself that not everybody has been burying themselves in this as long as I have. So I'm going to apologize to everyone who's listened to this for us, because I do love that people, I mean, like, you and I have gotten a wonderful, wonderful feedback from this, and people like what we're doing, and I love that. It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel good to teach people things. And I don't want to teach people things from a place of snootiness, because then suddenly we're pointed at the elites, you know?
Yeah.
Right? So I'm going to apologize for the tone that I just took when I was talking about, you know, whatever you were expecting it anyway. Maybe people weren't expecting it.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I became obsessed with news and politics and stuff in around 2015, because everything exploded.
Because rapists.
So yeah, well, and because I lived in the UK and I was experiencing weird stuff, you know, where people in Britain are very nice about the fact that I'm Irish, but they say weird shit, you know?
They do.
Like sometimes British people complain about foreigners, and I'm like, oh, I'm a foreigner. And
yeah,
they say,
fuck off.
No, but they say things like, well, you're not foreign, you're Irish. And there's like a few ways that that's messed up. Like, one, do you mean it's okay because I'm white? Two, do you mean it's okay because you still think you own my country and therefore I'm just British to you? But all that ramped up in 2015 and I got more interested again. But I do feel like a lot of these things that are happening very openly are shocking if you haven't been paying attention to them happening quietly beforehand.
Oh, I think that's a great way of putting that. And I will say that, in my opinion, from an outsider who can guess, I think that it was probably choice B, that they thought you were British, but just, like, not really British.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
It's a complicated relationship.
It's just insulting as fuck, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I hate when I say yeah, no, that's such a ridiculous thing to say.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes. No, dude, it drives me crazy. People on news, intensive purposes, that's not a phrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not a phrase. You're a communicator. You should know better. And I love Steve Kornacki, but he starts every single sentence after a question asked of him with, yeah, no. You might as well say dude, dude, or man, man.
It's tough. We all have tics.
We do. I love Steve Kornacki, by the way. I think he's one of the most brilliant numbers mine on television today. And I know people give Chuck Todd a really, really, really hard time. But Chuck Todd was at one time the most brilliant numbers man on television. And it should never be forgotten. Tim Russert mentored him for a reason.
Right on.
Anyway, yeah, no, you know, I did it again. You're right. You're right. It is hard for me to come to terms with the fact that not everybody is as into this as me. And has, like, that thread that I wrote on Matt Whitaker, I got a whole bunch of congratulations on it. It was awesome. And people were saying, hey, thanks for doing all the research. And I wanted to reply with, that's not research. I knew all that. I just went online to find things that were factual that backed what I was saying already.
I think, you know, it's good to be welcoming. One of the things that kind of breaks my heart on social media is there's all these, like, progressive people backlashing against people who have sort of come over, you know? Like, a celebrity, maybe a model, or somebody who's not in an industry where they're associated with, like, you know, study of politics and stuff starts caring about stuff, and they start tweeting about things, or they start saying things, or they go to events, and people say, "Oh, now you care? Now you're interested?" And I always think, like, well, what's the alternative? Do you want them to just remain uninterested?
That's why I'm trying to, like, that, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, that's why I rethought about what I said, like, when you didn't expect this and what were you thinking? Like, I mean, of course you didn't. You're not as into it as me. And if someone heard that and they feel insulted by that, then I apologize.
Yeah, but you know what I think the good thing is that we sort of represent both sides of that coin. Like, I'm somebody who is starting to pay attention now, you know, only in the last sort of 3 years or so. So we've kind of got both sides of that covered a little bit.
I would agree with that. And I would also add to your analogy, like maybe a star that came over. Not only is it counterproductive to say, what, now? Now you want to come out? Because then you just turn them off. I think it's also important to remember that we don't know where that person's head was before they decided to start talking about it.
Yeah.
And I say that on my own. Like when I first came to Twitter, you know, nobody listened to me because nobody knew that I knew all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I had people who are really, really, really respected and popular on Twitter now, and then come down on me when I would say something that I knew to be true. Where do you know that? How do you know that? You don't know that. And, you know, I got turned off. Like, a couple of people kept me on there, but I was going to leave because I was insulted. Like, how do you know me? You don't know me, you know? Now, I would encourage anyone who listens to this show, if they feel like I'm speaking down to them, I would encourage nasty words in my direction so that I keep myself in check. No, don't be nasty. I'm lying.
Just, yeah.
You know.
Just correct with kindness,
yeah.
You know.
But correct engage. With kindness. Yes, yeah, please.
That's been really, actually, it's been really cool, actually. People have, our first episode, people have been really kind, and they've really engaged, and that has felt really, really good. So thank you, everybody, for that. Thank you so much.
For sure. Thank you. And I hope that we can keep that standard for you so that you feel like we're respecting you as a listener.
Yeah.
I always want to feel that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Honestly, when we do this, I just think of you, my friend, and whatever, you know, I think of talking to you. This is a conversation between two friends, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what this grew out of, and I think it is pretty much what it is. So
I think so too.
So I guess we can wrap up around there, I think.
That is a good closer, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with that.
We freaking rock.
I'm probably gonna put this episode up tonight because I just feel like it's the right time.
I agree, and I should also tell everyone that this may be our last episode with that music that I love and Connor does not. So it's going to go. No, we have a friend who offered to write us music. So I would never, ever turn someone down that was going to write me a song. Like I got a little excited when I heard that.
Yeah, that's where I'm at as well. I really like the track that I found. I searched and searched and searched to find something that I didn't hate. And I actually ended up really liking the one that we have. However, I've listened to some samples from this friend of yours who's very kindly offered us something, and I'm really excited to hear what he writes for us. So there we go.
Too. He's so talented. Like, I feel small. He's talented.
That's crazy.
Okay, well, hey, yeah, man, let's call it, and we're thinking maybe soon we'll talk about maybe the crash or Reagan, you know.
Upcoming episodes, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I definitely want to talk about Reagan because I have such hate in my heart. Reagan, and the way that people talk about him with such reverence, even people who are more over our side of things, I can't handle it. The House Un-American Activities Commission, and that's where it's at for me, and that's where the story ends there, as far as I'm concerned. But that's for another episode.
Well, and I wanted to say one thing about the influence of Reagan that is stunningly weird that I've noticed ever since is that almost every single conservative male politician since Reagan has had some derivative of his hairdo.
All right. That's a great ending. Good night, folks.
All right, buddy. Good night.